It is podcast time. Oh my God, is it podcast time? We have an awesome, crazy, off the rails episode today. We're going to need to hear from all of you out there, whether you're watching on YouTube, whether you're listening on Spotify, on Apple, on Google, because I know you're going to have some feedback on this. Why? Because we're going to Hollywood. It is the pop culture episode. We're talking Fast and the Furious, Smoking the Bandit, Cannonball Run, American Graffiti, Baby Driver. It goes on and on and on. I don't even have time for my regular intro. I'm Christopher Smith, rambling about cars. And then the second half, maybe it's better. I think it's going to be better because we're talking about toys and collectibles and all the things that car people just love to collect. Whoo! We've got a long way to go.
Yeah.
Co-host Chris Bruce, why don't you tell us why there's four people here on the screen instead of just two?
Absolutely. So it's going to be a fun show this week. Not that it's not a fun show every week, but just a little bit more lighthearted, a little bit more conversational, less hard research like I did last week. So we've got some guests with us. We've got Motor One's global editor-in-chief, John Neff. He's back with us after joining us a few weeks back.
Yep. Thanks for having me again, guys.
And we have Brett Evans, Motor One's senior editor, joining us for the first time.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
And Brett, as any first-time guest, you must take a questionnaire.
Okay.
So, Smith, would you like to give them the first question, or would you like me to?
Well, let me just start by saying that we did our little outline before the episode. So
yeah, we'd like to do a little research or a little preparation.
Brett saw the outline, and he already answered the question, so he kind of knows the questions that are coming. So we had to change some of those up, Brett, because this is a personality test here, buddy.
Curveball, surprise.
We're getting right down to it. We'll start out some of the questions you already answered. What's your favorite 80s car?
I really like the... Oh, I don't even remember what I put now.
Well, good.
E28 M5 is a pick for sure. Big fan of the E28 M5. Ferrari F40, just kind of the legend. That's very high on my list as well. And also I was shopping. That's why I put this one down. I was shopping for this a few days ago. I would love a 88 Porsche Carrera 3.2. That would be a very, very strong contender if I had the money. So
good picks all the way around. How about your favorite 90s car?
The exact opposite. I would love a Buick Roadmaster Estate 94 to 96. That'd be very high on my list.
I have to applaud.
Did you have one of those?
Because I owned a 94 yeah. Roadmaster Estate. Yes.
I'm jealous. I've seen pictures and I want it.
It was epic. I mean, you could drift it for 10 miles because it was 10 miles long. It was so easy to control. The original questions then had us asking your favorite movie, but we're going to talk about that in a little bit. So instead, you're in California, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have a choice here, do you go convertible, hardtop, or T-top?
Oh, you threw me a curveball with a T-top. I was very ready to say convertible, but I think it might have to be a T-top now.
It's definitely, a very tough.
You definitely have to gotta let the sun in one way or another, but probably be the T-top just for the vibes and the memes.
And don't be like my neighbor when I was a kid who took the T-tops off of his car, left them in the garage, pulled back in after a nice Sunday drive, and ran over his T-tops and destroyed them.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
That's better than having the T-tops fly out when you forget to latch them back in.
True.
Yeah. Because you can clean up the garage pretty easy. Cleaning up the guy's car behind you. Not that it happened to me. It didn't.
Oh.
Okay. Two more quick questions.
Yeah. Bruce, just so that our audience knows, what car do you own right now?
I have a 2006 BMW Z4 Roadster, which is why I was prepared to say convertible until he threw me the curveball with the T-tops.
And how long have you owned that?
Had it 2.5 years, and top goes down every single time. Live in California, so I'm really lucky in that regard. But it's a lot of fun. I really, really love it. I've been a convertible guy ever since college, so don't see that well changing done. Anytime soon.
Well done. The gentleman that's also with us, John Neff, you love convertibles, don't you?
No.
Just like me and Brett, you love convertibles.
I'm anti-convertible, I think you could say.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, we won't hold that against you
too much. To each his own, but I don't see myself ever buying one.
All right, last question. Here's another curveball. Given the choice, are you going to catch some air in a Ram TRX or hit 200 miles an hour in a McLaren 765 LT?
Well, I have caught air in a truck before. I've never gone 200 miles an hour before. So I'm probably going to say the McLaren. I think I'd probably rather own the Ram, but if you're just giving me a one-time experience, I'm going to say the McLaren.
Or has a curveball on a curveball, maybe you modify the Ram to go 200 miles an hour.
That'd be scary. That'd be very dangerous.
Putting a jet engine in the back?
That would be awesome for like the 5 seconds you could get there before everything went terrible.
You could drive it off the side of a mountain and it might hit 200 miles an hour on the way down.
Yeah.
But all right. So now that we know everybody and we've introduced everybody, it's time to talk fun stuff. And for our first segment today, we are talking about the movies and TV starring cars that we like. You know, there are all sorts of TV shows, especially during the 80s and the late 70s. That was really the heyday for that, that basically made cars their star. I mean, whether you're talking about Knight Rider, Smith is going to back me up here, Transformers. Like, the people weren't really the stars. The cars were the stars.
The cars were the people and the stars.
Yeah, in Transformers' case, exactly. What did you, you know, what do you guys like when it comes to car movie / TV? What do you like to watch? What are your favorites? What are you into?
Let me open this up here before we jump into each individual's thing here, because I'm
sure.
Bruce, we're going to butt heads here because I'm a big fan of Ready Player One. I read the book. I watched the movie. The book is better than the movie. I'm a child of the 80s, and I think anybody who remembers that era as well as I do, I mean, there's so much to love there. I was going back yesterday just for fun, right? Watching the movie. That intro race scene has just like a bazillion vehicle references to various movies. And I was looking around on the internet and I didn't really find anybody that like wrote them all down anywhere. I mean, I've seen just some kind of hack and slash videos that look like came out before the movie came out. Here's a little rundown. Of vehicle references just in the beginning here. And I'm sure these will affect everybody here at some point. Mad Max Interceptor. Come on. Yeah. Oh, that's one of my favorites. Bigfoot. And I'm talking like 80s
Bigfoot.
Yeah. 80s Bigfoot that still had the stripe on it. It still had the old writing. The bike from Akira, anime, the A-Team van. I don't know if everybody catches the A-Team van is in there. Maybe you didn't catch Christine is in there. The Stephen King.
Oh, I missed that one actually.
Yeah. Christine is in there. 57. I think it's a 57 Plymouth Fury.
Yeah.
The Eagle 5, this wasn't in the race. This was just after the race when they're
what
in
is the Eagle 5 from Thunderbirds.
When they're in H's workshop, Eagle 5, the Winnebago from Spaceballs. I just caught that for the first time last night. And of course, Smokey and the Bandit, Trans Am is in there. I mean, that movie has so many references in there. Of course, and the obvious, Back to the Future, the
DeLorean.
DeLorean. With Kit's scanner from Knight Rider. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, that's I mean, there's the launch pad right there. I'll open it up. Whoever wants to go first. I mean, tell us about some of your favorite stuff.
I'll go next. But I want to comment about Ready Player One, because I think the reason I love that movie so much is it's like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, in that it brings together all of these licenses from different pop culture properties, right, into one movie where you never thought they'd be together for any reason. You know, it's like seeing Mickey and Bugs Bunny together in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So I love the movie for that reason. It's just such a odd sight to see all those cars in the same place. But for me, when I'm thinking about movies and TV that have to do with cars, I go all the way back to the moment I got into cars. I started thinking about cars and I was very young, and it was actually an episode of Quantum Leap. It was the first season, episode 9.
Is that 88?
You know what? I don't know the year. I didn't catch that when I was looking it up.
I mean, we're talking obscure stuff here. This is awesome.
It was. So the episode was where Sam leapt into the secretary of a product guy at a fictional car company who was kind of like a car designer. And I just remember seeing these scenes in their office where they're going through like designs of future cars, and it's set in like the 50s. So they're showing these big finned, you know, Cadillac looking cars. And I just thought to myself, like, that's a job. Like it was just, I didn't know that was a job. And I got the idea that I wanted to be a car designer right then and there. And that lasted through high school, that I wanted to be a car designer. But through that time, I just got into cars in general and eventually went from more like car designing to writing. But yeah, it was that show. The show didn't really have anything to do about cars. It just happened to be one episode. And the episode was called, I wrote it down here, What Price Gloria. It was the ninth episode of the first season and the first time that Sam ever jumped into a woman, because he played a secretary. But aside from that, I think with movies and TV, my, you know, greatest hits are everybody's greatest hits. They're Knight Rider, the General Lee, the Fall Guy truck, the A-Team van, Back to the Future DeLorean.
And totally forgot about Fall Guy.
I love Fall Guy.
What was that? Was a GM
something?
Yeah, it was. Was it a truck or no? It was a truck. It was a Fall Guy truck.
It was a truck. He had like it was like a lift on.
It was lifted, and it had the roll bar with the lights on top. I think a two tone beige on beige kind of paint job.
Big old square body Chevy.
Yeah, and I think they jump it in the opener.
Yes. Oh, I'm totally flashing back now.
Yeah.
It is a GMC K2500 wide side.
Yeah, just awesome. And I think the remarkable thing is that era of the 80s and the late 70s, where cars were characters in TV and movies. And I lament that it's not happening now. Like, it happened in so many pieces of TV and movies when we were young. And nowadays, I'm trying to think around of like modern TV shows or movies where like the car becomes the big thing. And I feel like it's very hard to think of many really good ones. Who knows? Maybe 20 years from now, the kids now will think upon these things that I'm not thinking of. But
I really enjoyed, although it was a dark storyline, when Jaguar appeared in Mad Men, and it ends up going in dark places. Mm-hmm. But it was neat to see that. Cars and modern stuff don't really appear in it.
When we say the cars were characters, I mean, you take Kit, for example, that is literal. It talked. It was a character. But then even the other ones, you know, like the DeLorean or the A-Team van or whatever, they were present in every episode. They were the sidekick of the main characters. Like, I just can't think of that in any modern day things. And, you know, I don't want to be an old curmudgeon and say, oh, kids are worse off today for not having that. But, you know, we always wonder why there's not as many kids getting into cars today. And I wonder if that's one of the reasons why.
You could probably argue, you know, like, in terms of not necessarily being a character, but kind of that like perpetual background supporting act. Mm-hmm. They did that in that 70s show, which is a little more recent. The Vista Cruiser was in so many episodes, and it became like very emblematic of the show.
Even that's 10 years old. I think it ended, and it's 20, you know, it's probably 15 years old from debut. Well, so
I can save this here, because I was a fan of Supernatural that ran for like 15, 16 seasons.
Crazy long show.
Crazy long. It just wrapped up last year.
And they have a 66 Malibu?
67 Impala. 67 Impala. Okay. Four-door. That was very much a character in that show. And in fact, they even did one episode. I think it wasn't last season. I think it was the season before. They did one whole episode that was shot from the perspective of the car. All the camera shots were inside the car. So you're kind of catching action going on outside the car. And then towards the end, the car hits something Dean's got to repair it again. The Impala in that show, and you're right, John, there aren't really any shows that are doing this anymore. Of course, Supernatural just ended. But that car was such a big character in that show. Yeah, they did the episode, values for the 67 Impala four doors have gone up since that show. They've gone up quite a bit. And I mean, once upon a time, nobody wanted a classic 60s muscle car with four doors. It was two doors or nothing. That show, I mean, there's pop culture for you. And Jensen Ackles, the one of the stars on the show, put in his contract. He had it put in his contract when the show was over. He got the Impala and he took it home.
That's cool.
He loves the car. He's posted some Instagrams of him with the car, driving the car. So well done, Mr. Ackles.
Yeah,
definitely.
So I came to this with a few video clips, and I'm going to keep them short. But, you know, so honestly, the first thing that I think got me into cars as a kid, how many of you are familiar with Speed Racer?
Yes.
Sure.
Mach 5 was in the Ready Player One in the beginning.
Well, we are watching the opening right now. I know you guys don't have the audio, but this was the first show that really got me, like, this was the first car thing that I can remember being into. And it's got an iconic theme song, and it's these kind of takes on these very mid-60s sports cars racing, as we can see here. For anyone who is just listening to the audio version, a fake Ferrari just blew up.
I never watched Speed. I'm aware of it. I've never watched it. What is going on?
He is a sports car driver. Okay. His dad, Pops Racer, created the ultimate sports car, and it's all, got all sorts of gadgets and whatnot. And he goes on races throughout the world. It's 60 sports car racing.
What kind of hijinks ensue? Is he fighting crime and solving cases, or is he?
No, he's mostly racing.
Like, are people trying to stop him? Does he have enemies?
Yes. Okay. Yes. There are people trying to stop him. But for the most part, it's just a guy racing, and his brother and his brother's pet monkey oftentimes are in the trunk of the car. Monkey.
Makes total sense. Yeah.
Monkey makes everything better. I'm with you, John. I'm aware of it, but I've never really watched it before.
I want to watch
really? So it was in syndication a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too. I remember seeing a lot of episodes just kind of like, you know, Saturday morning cartoons at like 6 a.m. before the new cartoons would come on. They would do reruns of Speed Racer, you know, at like 6 a.m. I remember that pretty vividly.
So I was watching Transformers. On Cartoon Network, like before the Toonami days in like the mid-90s, it was always just before my dad got home. So it must have been like 4:30 p.m. on Cartoon Network. They would show Speed Racer reruns. And I just ate it up. But so also speaking of my dad, what I have here is way more obscure, but maybe way more interesting. So I remember it must have been the mid-90s, watching TV with my dad. It was, you know, probably 8 o'clock or something like that. And this bizarre cartoon comes on, and I've never seen anything like it, and I'm going to be playing it now. And for ages, I had no idea what this was.
Ooh, good animation. What year was this?
I'll need to look it up. I believe this was 88.
80s? Okay.
Yes, wow. Late 80s.
Yeah, good animation for late 80s. Yeah,
detailed.
And for years, I had no idea what this was. And for anyone watching, it is this super high-tech, futuristic racing. There are explosions. People are, like, dying. The part that I'm not showing here is there's this journalist covering it all. And I had no idea what it was until, honestly, just a few years ago. And it is from this compilation film called Neo Tokyo. And this is specifically called The Running Man. And it's about this race car driver who dies while he's driving his car, but his spirit takes over the car and keeps driving it.
Whoa.
But in the mid-90s, I had no idea what it was until I kind of like started looking into it. And it turns out Sci-Fi Channel played this on occasion. So we must have just been flipping through the channels. My dad has always been a fan of racing. And we just stumbled upon this one night at exactly the right time.
Wow. Where can I watch it? Is this on YouTube? I want to watch
this. This is on Vimeo. I can send you the link.
Yeah, this looks amazing.
It's 15 minutes, so it's not anything very long. It's a one-act thing.
Just a one-shot thing? 15 minutes? Wow.
Yep.
You win the Obscure Award tonight. Holy crap, Bruce. This looks awesome, too.
So, So a ghost piloting a car, and it's just... I had no idea what it was for years until I kind of started digging into it. And sadly, it's not on Blu-ray anymore. The DVD goes for like $100.
I believe.
But thankfully, you can kind of find it places, and it's just amazing. So yeah, Neo Tokyo is the film. Running Man is the section of that film.
So before we go on, I do want to ask, what about the new Speed Racer movie, or the newish, the one that was made, you know, five or six years ago? Good or bad? It looked good? I've never watched it.
Reviewed it for my college newspaper. It's fine. It's visually stunning. The story's okay.
It's cotton candy. There's no substance to it whatsoever, but it is so fun to watch.
I don't know if you have a 4K Blu-ray player. If you do, get it on that. Yeah. Whatever the most high-res version you can get, that's what you need to watch it on.
All right. And
Christina Ricci looks like a live action anime character. She has such big eyes. She kind of just has that like very like childlike appearance. So she's perfect in that role. It is
John
wonderful.
Goodman plays a fantastic Pops Racer. Oh, he's a fantastic live action cartoon character.
Yeah. You know, like viewed from a modern lens, there's definitely some problematic things you gotta keep an eye out for. But you know, within its time period and everything like that, it's wonderful. I love it.
And just super quick, one last thing. This is the kind of the genesis of this whole thing. Smith and I, after we got done recording last week, we got started talking about Jackie Chan and Mitsubishi car chases.
We should have kept recording that.
We probably should have.
So let's read.
If just Jackie Chan loves Mitsubishis. I don't know if there was some sort of like advertising deal there, but there are a ton of Jackie Chan films where he drives Mitsubishis.
Yeah, I can think of one.
This is from the Jackie Chan film, Who Am I? And in this, he is in a Pajero doing some rallying. And it's just like, I mean, for lack of a better word, it's just like car porn. Like, this is just the Dakar rally, but Jackie Chan is at the wheel. And it's inexplicable, but it's also fantastic. And Smith, I know, this is also from Who Am I, where he drives an Evo.
There's the chase scene with the Evo 4.
Yeah.
Well, he's not driving it. I can't remember the female co-star in there.
Yeah, I don't know.
It starts off, he's driving it with the other person that's in the car because they're handcuffed. And it's like he's steering and she's working the gas. And he gets hit in the plums with a shifter. And, you know, he does the typical Jackie Chan. Oh, but then they get another person in the car who's like this pro driver. And I mean, she's just handbraking it everywhere. I love the Evo. And I love that scene. I'm glad you brought that up, Bruce. Yeah.
But yeah, so just briefly, that's what kind of got us onto this talking about cars and movies thing was, of all things, the Mitsubishi topic last week. And just how many Mitsubishis appear in weird Jackie Chan films. And it's just fun.
And so, how much we miss.
Drive a 3000 GT and Thunderbolt, too. Isn't that one of his?
He drives a bunch of Mitsubishis and Thunderbolt. I think you're right. A 3000 GT is among them. Like, I know an Evo is among them too. There's a bunch. Yeah.
I was thinking of Cannonball Run 2.
Cannonball Run 2.
Also, he's in a Mitsubishi in that too, I think.
Yeah, and that's an old Gallant, if I remember. Yeah,
I think you're right. Correct. But with like a jet engine, quote unquote.
It was almost like a Japanese version of Kit. Like, it was a very high tech Japanese
was
car.
That was the first Cannonball Run. And it was actually a Subaru in the first Cannonball.
Oh, okay. Is he in both?
Yeah, he was in both. Okay. And the Subaru, it was like a little, every time you saw the Subaru, it just made like this weird kind of jet noise.
Yeah.
And it was super fast. And
great stuff.
Brett, why don't you take us next year?
Well, I was just feeling very dark after that ghost car that we just watched tear up.
It was dark.
Mine is pretty much the polar opposite. The car that got me into cars, the movie that got me into cars was Disney's The Love Bug, the original. And watching Jim Douglas hoon around in a beautiful little cream white 63 Volkswagen just kind of like set the course for me. I actually like the sequels a lot better. My favorite is either Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo or Herbie Goes Bananas. Herbie Goes Bananas is great because he ends up in South America floating around the Amazon, I think, and gets pulled out of the Amazon by a little boy who becomes his best friend. So it's just like the most ridiculous, inane. If a Volkswagen is the main character of a car, was it ridiculous enough? He just gets in the most unusual and weird situations. And I love it.
And talk about cars as characters. I mean,
yeah, that's
not a sidekick. That's the star of the movie.
And how can you get more endearing than a bug? And Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo, where he, I mean, can you say that he hooked up with the Lancia?
He did.
At the end, they were opening doors and they were touching doors
The best throwaway line in that movie too is when they have to kind of like talk to Giselle, the Lancia, and they have to kind of like explain to her that, hey, Herbie's kind of a cad. Like they've had to have this conversation with a Thunderbird and two Ferraris and three, like he's kind of a ladies man.
He's kind of a player.
They kind of have to talk Giselle into like driving the race because he's not going to wait for her. And I just love, yeah, I love the idea of this adorable little Volkswagen being kind of a little player and also thwarting a jewel theft in the process. Like it's just peak 1970s Disney camp, and I love it.
I remember seeing those. My parents showed me those when I was little. I mean, those could be actually, if I think about it, you know, my first real car movies.
Yeah, it was. I remember my mom would like back when we didn't even have a VCR. She would like rent a VCR and bring home Herbie from the video rental store.
You could rent a VCR, like
yeah,
oh, yeah.
I don't remember that.
I vaguely
remember. We had one, but I think I remember seeing that. It's like, wow, you could actually rent those.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just like, you know, three wires to plug in and you're good to go. But, I very vaguely remember her bringing home a VCR from the rental store and popping in Herbie. And that was how I got my start. Still my favorite automotive, series for sure. My favorite automotive, movies. Quality stuff.
Brett, I've got good news for you. For anyone who has Disney Plus, The Love Bug, Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo, Herbie Goes to Bananas, and Herbie Rides Again are all on Disney Plus. So if anyone needs a quadruple feature, there you go.
And you can make it a quintuple feature because even though it's not a classic, Herbie Fully Loaded is still a solid entry.
Oh, is that the new one with
Lindsay Lohan?
Thank you for saying that.
In NASCAR, he finds a way to. They find some loophole that allows him to race in NASCAR, and you know it's not a good movie, but neither were the originals. Let's be honest, and so it fits in with the pantheon.
You guys are giving me a long list of things to watch. I want to watch all of these things.
He gets this cool
right
NASCAR makeover. He's got the little like lip spoiler at the end.
He's got a gurney flap. He's got some wide fenders. It's pretty cool.
He gets a total NASCAR.
You're convincing me that I need to see this movie, and I've never seen Herbie Fully Loaded. So
go ahead. I think it's before Lindsay Lohan went like really crazy.
It is. It was pre-crazy Lindsay.
Yeah,
and it's not a good movie at all. But neither are any of the movies that we've discussed today.
Exactly.
Not, no. Like that's the thing. Like even like I don't know, Smokey and the Bandit, good or bad? Like I like it, but I don't know if it's a good movie.
It's totally not a good movie, but I mean, it's an icon.
I mean,
it's an iconic movie.
I find most of the movies that I loved when I was 10, 15, do not hold up. Like when I rewatch them again through my adult eyes, my post 40 eyes, I'm like, I see what I liked then. I wouldn't enjoy it fresh right now if it was the first time I've ever seen it, but I have so many good memories attached to them that honestly, I buy movies from my childhood, like these car movies on iTunes when they're like on sale for $5, not because I ever intend to like watch them fully. I just want them in my collection. I just want to own them. So I have a lot of movies like that.
You're buying part of your childhood. Back.
Exactly.
You're
if I ever want to watch them or watch a scene, they're there.
Yep. I'm wearing my Rad Racing. Can you see it on the camera? My Rad Racing t-shirt. Just I had to have that t-shirt because Rad 1986. I was a biker kid. Come on, man. And you know, you don't want to talk about obscure. The prize in that movie was a C4 Corvette for winning Hell Track. And Lori Loughlin, you know, before the scandal,
right. Before prison.
Oh, I was in love with her in the biggest way.
And I watched that movie like 2 weeks ago. That's a good movie.
And in the parade, she was driving that, I think it was like a GMC, like a little S15 with the bikes on the roof. Mm-hmm. I got to be careful. That's a whole other thread I can go down. Brett, what else you got? Anything else?
That's my car movie for sure. I know we've got a few others that we still need to talk about, but Love Bug was the one that really even up until I was a teenager.
Like, we could go on this for a while. I'm sorry, but just again, super quick. I have to share this because it's one of my favorite episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh boy.
It is called Master Ninja. It was a pilot made for some American network in the 80s. It stars a guy who drives a van, who has a pet hamster, and who has a mentor who is a ninja. And I just want you guys to watch this because it is this guy and it is a young Demi Moore engaging in a car chase in his van. So
sounds totally normal.
What's that?
Wow.
Yeah. You're going to see a young Demi Moore. I don't know. I mean, she's got to be in her early 20s at this point. She's young. Again, no audio like all of our stuff. But
Look at the van.
That's a van.
GMC full-size van.
So, I mean,
Diplomat.
Guys also geek out now at older, when you see older movies or TV shows like this, and just like the completely normal cars?
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Like what we're seeing just here.
Absolutely pristine, beautiful 80s.
That's what that's what I geek out about, is that they're in good condition, because you can't find them like that today. So when you see them in their original form back in the 70s or 80s, it's like, that's what they look like new?
There's a great Albert Brooks movie where in the very beginning of it, I don't remember what it is, but he dies in the beginning of the movie and goes to heaven. And
Betting your life? Something like that.
Yes.
Your life. Defending your life.
And at the very beginning of the movie, he goes to the BMW dealer to pick up this new 325i convertible that he's bought, E30 325i. And he shows up and there's a 735, I think, sitting on the showroom, and he thinks that's his car and he gets really excited. And then he's given the 325 and he's like, oh man, why'd you show me this awesome thing when I have to drive away in this piece of crap? And it's just really hilarious seeing a brand new BMW dealership from the early 1990s, because all of those cars are destroyed or slammed. Like there's no in between. They're either like rusting away or they are slammed and stanced. And so it's really weird seeing like an young urban professional going into a BMW dealer, and that's what he walks away with. It's really kind of a lot of fun.
Super fun fact about that movie: either Criterion Collection just put it out, or it's coming out in the coming months, and they announced it. So
Any
Defending Your Life fans, you will soon. Wow. You can either order it now. You can definitely order it now.
Wonder if we can find that scene on YouTube. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, we'll have to look.
If we can, we'll put it in the description.
Definitely.
Well, speaking of obscure, I've got a few things to talk about. I kind of started this all off with the Ready Player One, and I mean, I'm with everybody else. I mean, come on, Back to the Future was so big for me, and the DeLorean was just so awesome. Dukes of Hazzard, you know, John, you were talking about how things have changed in your post 40 eyes, and I can't watch Dukes of Hazzard anymore. I was so in love with it as a kid. You know, I caught it towards the end of its run, and I remember telling my mom, let's drive through the cornfield so we can jump the car and not realizing that that's not how people actually drove. But I can't watch that anymore. It's too campy. It's too silly. And I'm, part of me is sad by that, but another part of me is just like, well, hey.
I think
that was the time, you know.
TV and movies have changed in the last 10, 20 years where there's like gritty realism. And when you go back to that campiness that when you were a kid thought, oh, life is really like that out there. That's you didn't know that was campy. You just thought that was how exciting and fun life really was.
Right.
And, but nowadays, you know, we got the Sopranos. We have life's a hellhole that we're all just trying to endure.
Yeah.
And yeah, you watch some of these TV shows.
It's like, we don't want the silly escape anymore. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't. We want the gritty one.
You know, and you know what? Speaking of silly, I also got to say Smokey and the Bandit. I mean, I come from three generations of truck drivers. My brother's truck driver, I consider him a different generation for me just because there's a big age difference there. So seeing Smokey and the Bandit, and my father, his CB handle was actually Snowman long before Smokey and the Bandit. So nice. there was that special tie there. And of course, we know how that movie elevated the 77, 78, 79, really, really all those Pontiac Trans Ams to just superstardom to where, I mean, to get a nice special edition, you know, a Trans Am SE from 77, you're talking six figures. I mean, that's the power of pop culture right there.
Do you think one could make the argument that Pontiac wouldn't have lasted as long as a brand as it did had it not been for the success it had in pop culture with Smokey and the Bandit, with Knight Rider, with these, and maybe those are the only two, but maybe there's more. But you know, I think these pop culture visibility that some of these cars get can be huge for their brands. I mean, obviously the Mustangs and everything, the Corvettes and everything, but if you're a smaller automaker like Pontiac and you get your car in a big movie like that, Pontiac and the Band or Smokey and the Bandit or Kit, man, that's free advertising that you could never pay for.
Well, when you start looking at movies from that perspective and even television shows, take a closer look, everybody out there, you'll start to notice in some TV shows or in some movies, there is an overabundance of vehicles.
One kind of car.
From one particular manufacturer. And yeah, I mean, that's where
it's really, honestly, it's annoying when I notice it.
It can be totally annoying.
Yeah.
Example. Does anyone notice that Scarlet Witch drives a Buick Regal and was confused by that?
Not a Regal, a Verano.
Oh, is it a Verano?
It is a Verano, yes.
I totally caught that. Oh my, I can't believe you said that, Bruce. Oh my God, I thought
it was red.
That caught that.
Yeah.
It's like
Burgundy. Really?
Yeah.
Scarlet freaking Witch drives a Buick? Come on.
But it could have been a rental. A lot of Veranos in the rental fleets.
Maybe. I mean, why doesn't she just fly around?
That'd be too obvious. Anyway, we're getting a little off. I couldn't find the dealership scene. I could find Albert Brooks driving the BMW.
Yeah.
So we are just going to take a super quick moment here. You are right. Albert Brooks in a E30 325i.
That guy looks like a BMW driving douchebag.
He's about to die.
Oh, is he? I don't know the movie.
That's the plot of the movie. Yeah, he's going to die any second now. So there you go.
There it is.
When I see that car,
color might the E30 I had.
When I see that car, I think of Beverly Hills 90210, and the blonde had that car, but in red, the BMW convertible.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm trying to think which blonde.
Look at that.
Jenny Garth
did. Yeah. I forget her character. Was it Kelly?
I don't know the character name.
Yeah. I can't remember.
Well, I tell you what, you want to keep it BMW? You want to keep it BMW from the 80s? Let's keep it BMW from the 80s.
What do you got?
I was a huge, huge Moonlighting fan. I was so in love with Sybil Shepherd. She drove the 635 CSI E24. I remember seeing this car and just being completely in love with it. And yeah, let's take a moment and look at Bruce Willis with hair. I mean, come on. But let's
that brief moment.
Let's put this in motion here.
Ooh, nice,
gorgeous.
Yeah, with the tall.
Look at that.
The tall kidney grill.
Look at that car. Look at the Cadillac.
I like the MG that he just cut off too.
Yeah.
That's a Thunderbird.
It was a Thunderbird. Yeah.
That wasn't a Market. That wasn't a Lincoln.
Look at that though. Think
might have been, but anyway. Ooh, and then the LA Reservoir.
Yeah, everybody drives the LA the Reservoir.
It's a common thoroughfare. I can tell you from personal experience. I'm on it every other week.
Yeah.
I didn't know much about cars at this point. I was still a youngin, but I loved that car. I loved the way it looked. I thought it was like some supercar. I mean, it was good for the time.
Yeah, for the time.
It was a pricey car at the time.
Yeah. It was a pricey car. I've been so close to getting an E24 so many times just because of Moonlighting and maybe Cybill Shepherd in Moonlighting. I still watch. This is one of the shows that it was campy back then, but I can still watch
it. You still watch it?
I don't know if I can. I can still watch it.
No, it holds up, actually. It's really well written.
We used to watch that show when we visited my grandma every Sunday, I think.
they broke the fourth wall a lot, which I kind of dug. And I thought David Addison was just the coolest guy ever.
And
he drove that car. I got to give a quick shout out because we haven't said it yet. And I know we'll get hate mail if we don't. The Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
Like it or not, that franchise has inspired so many people to embrace cars, to get into cars. I remember going to see the first movie in the theater. And I mean, the parking lot was like a car show. Nobody would have predicted that the franchise would have gone this long.
Especially after like kind of the doldrums of the third and fourth one, things got kind of rough there for a little while.
Right. But I mean, you know what? They kind of recast it into this crazy adventure series with cool cars. And hey, you know what? There are a lot of cool cars in the franchise. The storylines have been crazy. I have the entire series except the most recent movie. I just couldn't bring myself to buy that movie just because I'm sorry. Sending out Ford Crown Victoria taxis that are somehow automatically under full autonomy when everything is still mechanical. It's like, sorry, I couldn't make that ridiculous leap, but they've brought back Han.
Yeah.
If they can bring back Giselle, Gal Gadot.
You've brought this up so many times. I don't think Wonder Woman's coming back.
I think she's too expensive for him.
I know Gal Gadot listens to this podcast. I know she listens.
She does.
Come back to us, please. You don't need to. You're Wonder Woman in the Fast series.
In defense of the whole franchise, what I really like about Fast and the Furious is it started out in like the tuner scene, street racing, Japanese culture of cars. And which was a great culture to explore. And they did a fun, maybe silly, campy version of it, but it was cool. But then it kept broadening the cars that it exposed people to American muscle classics and then supercars. And then so it started off in like one corner of car fandom, and it expanded to include everything. All the cars that everybody loves. And yeah, it's gone off the rails like 9 different times, but
how long was that runway?
Yeah. Oh my God. That's a great point. But I mean, look, it's one of those movies you could sit down, watch once, be happy, and then never watch it again. And that's fine.
I think we're going to have to come back to this. This is a topic.
Too much.
Yeah.
Why don't we have a whole episode on just Fast and the Furious one day?
Oh, easily we could. Let's wait until the new one comes out, and a week before we'll do it. Yeah,
we'll get Dahl as a guest. I got her on speed dial. She's listening to us now.
So
she's listening right now. I can get her on speed dial. We can have her on the podcast.
By the way, I believe her last name is pronounced Gadot.
Yes, I was.
I thought it was Gadot.
Whenever she says it, it's Gadot. But anyway. We need to reference the people who actually listen to this show and who send us emails and who want to talk with us.
Okay.
So I'll start this out. Nathan Mondor, who is our buddy in Canada, he has emailed us several times and he's a great guy. Nathan, I've edited your email down a little bit. It's not that things weren't like helpful or useful or cogent or anything like that.
We just knew where this episode was going to go, man.
Yeah. So I'm reading from Nathan right now. I learned a lot about Mitsubishi in this one. I was not aware that they had such a partnership with Chrysler. It was really interesting for you guys to talk about it. You also talked about the IS500 F-Sport performance, and you said that you're not a big fan of the grill. Personally, I don't mind it. I think it's because I grew up knowing only this grill on Lexus cars. Nathan is, I believe, 16. Nathan, if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, bud, but I know you're a teenager. Anyway, I cut the grill in half to see how it would look. I think it looks okay. It's not, it's a step in the right direction for their design. And that was so simple. I also transformed it into a real F-Sport model. So anyone who's reading this, we will have Nathan's two renders in our post so you can see what he thinks of it. I don't own an amazing car to share with you, but I do know a few interesting cars from my country that you probably don't. The Bricklin SV1. Sorry, Nathan. I know about that one.
We got the Bricklin.
The rest of your list, though, bud, I've got no clue on. The Magnum Mark V, the Foligno CB7, the Manic GT, and the HTT Plethiore.
Are we being Rickrolled right now? Because this
sort of
I've heard of some of these.
So, but Nathan, you're right. At some point, we should do a little bit of a segment on Canadian cars because. Sure. There's some interesting stuff there. GM had its own dedicated Canadian brand. It was Acadia or Arcadia. I forget which. There's been some interesting stuff there. So, yeah, thanks for your input. Thanks for sending us those renderings. Anyone who's listening to this, you'll be able to see them in the post at motor1.com. And Smith, do you want to take our second letter?
Yeah, we got an email from Blake, and Blake's emailed us before. Good dude. We were talking about the McLaren hybrid, the Artura. Blake mentions that, he thinks it weighs at least 3,400 pounds. Actually, Blake, I got to say, McLaren has said directly it's 3,303 pounds.
Yep. That's what they're putting on their press site. So
that's what they got on their press site.
That's their number.
Drain all the fluids out of it, and it's even lighter. It's like 3,000, even just about. So it is pretty light for a hybrid. He says, do you think journalists get excited about these hybrid supercar things more so than the readers? That's actually a really good question. I know you guys get to drive them for free and everything. Actually, Bruce and I, we're part of the daily news team. So
yeah,
Blake, we don't get the free cars.
No, Blake, just to let you and other listeners know, Smith and I do not get press cars. I've worked at Motor One since 2017 or 2018. I got our long distance Passat wagon. I went on a trip for Buick, and I got to test Lexus LS safety tech. Those are the three cars I've driven since I've been here as part of that job. So, we do not get press cars, bud.
We're not part of that, but I know John and Brett, I mean, you guys have certainly driven all kinds of cars.
And John actually doesn't get press cars anymore either. It's kind of a walled garden. It's kind of sort of with editorial and not. So
yeah, and it's interesting because the end of his letter talks about how he doesn't get the appeal of having a heavier vehicle with a worse sounding engine, assuming he means the hybrid part, and a much more advanced computer system shuffling power everywhere to make you look like a hero when you just aren't. I don't know how old he is, but he says, I guess at a ripe old age, I appreciate a good engine much more so than a battery pack and computers. And I wanted to finish his letter because I consider myself more of a futurist. I actually own an electric car and I love them. And I own two. Yeah. And a Tesla and a little Spark EV. I can't wait until the future comes more and more. Like, I love that electric cars are here. I think they're awesome and they're fun and they have their own personalities. That doesn't mean I want every gas powered car in the world to disappear or to, stop being sold or anything. But I think it's cool when automakers start entering the segment of electrification, whether it's through hybrid or full electrification, and whether it's a supercar manufacturer or Volkswagen. I think it's super cool. There's never been this level of innovation and experimentation and new technology in cars since gas engines overtook electric back in the 10s and 20s of the last century. So I think it's super cool.
Well, and they've kind of proved, John, that, you can really make a very passionate and exciting electric car. You know, Tesla's been building fast electric cars for a long time, but then the Porsche Taycan Turbo S, like, I don't know if anyone out there watching has heard videos of these things launching or anything like that. They sound like spaceships, and they're just as exciting
cool.
and as...
It's different.
Yeah, it's just as much of a thrill ride as anything else, exactly. It's just kind of a different way of getting your thrills, and you know, I agree. I like a big V8 or I like a, you know, a high strung, you know, supercar engine as much as the next person, but there's room for both.
Yeah. There, I mean, the act of driving and enjoying the drive isn't just about sound. I mean, I've talked to people that will refuse to drive anything that doesn't have a manual transmission. And it's like, well, are you a driving enthusiast or are you a stick enthusiast? Or somebody won't drive a car unless it's got a nice throaty V8. It's like, well, are you a car enthusiast or are you just an audiophile? You like to hear that certain sound. Yes, of course, it all comes together. But there are different, there are different ways to enjoy different groups of performance. Now, my take on hybrids, I really see hybrid in a performance aspect as just another power adder, like a supercharger, like a turbocharger. It's taking the gasoline engine that's in there and it's injecting more power into it. Now, it's adding more weight in the process, but unlike you would normally have with a turbocharger or a supercharger, you're not going to take a big benefit or a big penalty in miles per gallon. You actually have a power adder that, if you want, will also be very, very economical for you when you want that. And I don't think there's one single person in the world who enjoys spending money for fuel. So when you look at it that way, I legitimately see hybrids has a power adder for a performance aspect, but then it also has the added benefit of you can use it in an efficient manner when you want. And it's sort of a best of both worlds thing. Yes, it does add a lot of weight.
Well, look at it when it's done well, like in the Acura NSX, right? Mm-hmm. The marriage of combustion and electricity in a vehicle that's both a supercar and pretty much a daily driver as well. Like it is a best of all worlds kind of thing when it's done well.
To the weight point, 50 years ago, every single car had a cast iron engine, and now you get a cast aluminum engine with magnesium parts and stuff like that in your run of the mill Honda Accord. And so, battery weight, battery technology is going to become more compact and lighter as the time goes on. And, you know, this is just the price that we pay for being, you know, early in history. We're going to end up with slightly heavy power adder hybrid technology, just like you were saying, Chris.
Also, it shifts the center of gravity low. So even though you're adding more weight, if you can control that weight, it can lead to a lot better handling.
So as like, far as we're not trying to be a dick. It's not like we disagree with you, but you're not necessarily wrong. There are points to your side that having a purely combustion engine does save weight, just like having a purely electric engine saves weight, and that there is a compromise between having a hybrid there. So you're not necessarily wrong. We just have, it's just a difference of opinion. We thank you for, you know, emailing us. Sorry. You know, let us know what you think. You know, if you think we're wrong, we'll let you know.
Shoot us an email, podcast@motorone.com. I'll also just do a shout out because Blake sent us pictures of his car. He's got a very nice Challenger. He's got a really sweet 2020 Challenger Scat Pack with a 6-speed manual. That's a boss car, man. It's a little heavy. I hate to say it. Zing. Okay, we need to move this on because
Blake tracks us all down.
And no. Hey, you know what? As we've been saying the last few episodes, we want to learn more about you, listeners. We want to learn more about your cars, your car stories. I see in a future episode, I see us actually compiling a lot of these together to talk more at length about what our listeners are doing, what our listeners are driving. So Blake, thank you very much for sending this in. We're going to come back to that in a future episode. Right now, we still have more nerd stuff to do, man. And I'm sitting here surrounded by toys and diecast cars, and I have pictures on my walls of cars. The second half of this, every single person who is into cars has some other little hobby that relates to cars that keeps them happy, that keeps them going. If you're watching on YouTube, you can probably see the wall behind me that's filled with cars and a steering wheel and robots. That'll be another thing for another time.
So yeah, that's the thing, that a real world car is going to cost at the absolute minimum several hundred dollars, if not several thousand dollars. a Matchbox car is a buck at the grocery store. Mm. And, you know, that part of the hobby, and I've said this before, that loving to play automotive video games or loving Matchbox Hot Wheels or Lego or anything like that, that's all part of the automotive hobby. It's not, one is not more valid than the other. Just because you're in your garage wrenching on a 66 Chevelle versus putting together a Lego model, it's, we live under a big tent here.
The person wrenching on the 66 Chevelle may not be putting together a Lego model, but I guarantee that person will have some sort of scale model somewhere in their house. And that's,
but it's also just about passion, that both of those people have passion for cars. And they're maybe expressing it differently, but it's still there. And I think that's really important to point out.
It is. Well, it's important to point out, and it's also important to embrace, because there's so many ways to enjoy cars. Let's jump into it here. Let's start with you, Brett. What are some of your just like little car hobbies, collectibles? What keeps you into this?
Well, like about just about everyone who does anything with cars, definitely diecast models. My boyfriend and I recently moved in together, and the biggest challenge was combining our 1/18th model collection.
I feel your pain. I feel your pain.
Label them.
I have a few, and he has like dozens. And so all of a sudden, our living room
is like we need to get him on
a bastion to diecast cars. And then Legos too. We just got done building the Lego Porsche 911, and we did kind of a fun turbo targa hybrid. You can pick one or the other, and we ended up doing both, kind of like getting a little creative, and that was really fun. I also have just like tons and tons of old magazines. I've got like some really cool 50s and 60s sports car illustrated, yes. Road and Track, just like some really bitchin' old stuff that my brother gave me a few years ago for Christmas, and it kind of just like set a new obsession in motion. And I'm pretty sure my mom kicked him when I opened this gift, because all of a sudden it was like, oh crap, now we're gonna have to find places for all this stuff until he moves out of my house. And that was very much the case. Until I moved out, they had boxes and boxes of my crap just sitting all over the place. So tons of old magazines, and that's kind of what got me started on this life path, is reading old issues of Road and Track and reading Peter Egan and being like, oh my gosh, someone actually does this for a living. And that was kind of what got me started back in the, you know, a few years
magazines
ago.
That totally slipped my mind. For a while I was collecting a lot of old Motor Trend and Car and Driver and then it just got to the point where it's like, I collect too much stuff, man. So the magazines got to go. Neff?
Well, I mean, funny, mine has to do with magazines as well. Like Brett, I bought every car magazine from the big four car magazine publications throughout the 90s, and I still have them all, like thousands in my garage. But in addition to car magazines, when I was a kid, I also bought radio control car magazines. So RC Car Action.
Oh my God.
It's funny, Bruce, because you said, you know, like a real car costs thousands of dollars and a Hot Wheels cost $2. My problem was that even though a real car was thousands of dollars, an RC car was still hundreds of dollars, which I didn't have either. So I coveted RC cars just like I coveted real cars, and I read about them in magazines. And so I still follow RC cars as an adult, although it's funny because I still don't own one. I'm still like a little kid with my nose pressed against the window. But yeah, I still have hundreds of RC car magazines too. Lego, obviously, although it's funny, I wasn't into Lego as a kid, but I am as an adult. And I think it's because the level of how intricate and impressive the car sets are today is so high. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the case when we were young. They were just simple. They weren't even, well, they didn't have licenses either. So they, you know, it wasn't like there was a Ford Mustang kit. Nowadays you have the Speed Champion small sets, and then you have the Creator large sets. And both of them are just incredibly detailed and just amazingly designed. So I've bought almost every one that's come out. I have the Porsche one too. Although unlike Brett, I keep most of mine boxed and don't put many of them together. Although I did put this one together.
Audi. Oh, look at that.
Audi Sport Quattro.
Yeah. This is one of the newer Speed Champion ones.
It has the same thing in the box. Okay. For the listeners, we have to explain the irony here, because
that is ironic.
John is being very, very modest. How big is your Lego collection?
I mean, I have $2,000 or $3,000 worth of Lego sets in boxes in a closet.
And they're in that's the thing, that they're in boxes. You've never opened them.
No.
Are they investments for you, John? Are you like planning on, are you like keeping them mint so that you can sell them later, or?
It's just the kind of collector I am, really. I'm like that with my car magazines too. Like I was known as a Nazi when I was a little kid with my car magazines, because if they were sitting on the coffee table and somebody put a drink on them, I would flip out. Like, my car magazines had to stay in pristine condition. And if one came in the mail that was ripped, I had to go to the store and buy a new one off the shelf, because that one would be perfect. So I have some duplicates of some. And I'm just like that with, like, if I'm not going to open it, then yeah, it's going to stay in perfect condition. Am I ever going to sell them? I don't know. They're not really investments. I don't know. And I don't feel like, this is going to sound weird, but like, I don't feel like putting together Lego all the time. Like, sometimes I have been inspired by these new Speed Champions because their proportions are so much better now that they are two minifigs wide instead of one minifig. So yeah, they're way better now. And then the last thing I'll say is video games, racing games. But racing games didn't touch me, I think, until they got real. And I'm talking about Virtua Racing on the Sega, what was it called? The
32X, yeah.
The 32X, and they brought Virtua Racing, which was like the first polygon-based racing game for a home console.
Yep.
And then also before that in the arcade, Iron Man Stewart's Off-Road Championship.
We've discussed that before.
Yeah, that was sprite-based, but it was still amazing and kind of realistic. And then, of course, the Gran Turismo series, the early one. What was the one we all played? The second or third?
Two, probably.
Two? Yeah, I think two was the one. Where I had like a 1,400 horsepower Mitsubishi Eclipse I could just win everything with by holding the accelerator. Yep. I didn't even need to steer. I could just bounce
jumping into every wall along the way.
Yep. Didn't matter. All that stuff. I mean, I agree. That's all part of the automotive enthusiast experience. As a kid, it's a gateway drug. As an adult, it's just another branch.
Go ahead, Brett.
You could probably credit Gran Turismo for like a lot of like modern, like this like fascination with JDM cars, because we didn't get the Evolution or the WRX until 2001, 2002. Yeah. We didn't get the Skyline until 2007, or was it 2008? We didn't get the GTR. And so, you know, all these kids playing these like, oh, what's a Mitsubishi Lancer Evolution? I've never even heard of that. What's the Subaru, you know, WRX STI or 22B, I've never heard of that either. All of a sudden you've got all these kids like growing up lusting after these cars in the video games, and then they turn 25 years old and they're importing them from Japan for $70,000. You know, this is kind of a huge huge quantum shift in like automotive enthusiasm for kids of older millennials and younger Xers.
And those cars, like the Lancer and the WRX, were born of rally racing, but that's not why they became popular in the U.S. They became popular in the U.S. because of racing games and and Furious and the tuner culture.
And think about how manufacturers all of a sudden really wanted to be part of that. I mean, up to that point, I was like, video games, that's for kids, whatever. Yeah. But when you think about now, how important it is for manufacturers to be represented in various video games.
Well, it was the GT2 RS debuted at the Forza presentation. Yeah. They lowered it from the ceiling. Yeah. Like, here's the new GT2 RS, previous gen. Like,
somebody's got to do a documentary one day about Forza versus Gran Turismo. I'd love to.
Oh, I could.
I'd love to listen to a podcast series about that, that battle. Mm-hmm.
Because I was a Gran Turismo person, a Sony person.
I was too at the beginning, and then I switched to Forza.
A long way. I started with GT, the very first one.
Right.
I was like, hey, what's this? And I was like, yeah, this is pretty cool. And then I unlocked the high-res GT version that you could get in the first Gran Turismo, and that was awesome. And then
isn't that where, like, the background stuff got, like, lower res, but the car was higher res?
Yeah. The background detail wasn't as important, but it's just the gameplay was a lot smoother. Yeah. Things looked a lot – the frame rates were better. And I stayed with Gran Turismo up until – Well, I mean, I think GT4 was probably the highlight. You know, when you got so many tracks, you had the Nürburgring that you could run. And Forza was just kind of starting to build up speed. And then, I mean, they just continually shot themselves in the foot with delays and broken promises. Meanwhile, Forza was just turning the volume up to 11. And that's why I've got the Xbox X out here that I still play with Forza Horizon 4, mm-hmm. and Forza 7. And yeah, Bruce, since we're talking games.
Well, I'm not going to talk games so much today. Games are fun, and I have a whole room of games, and I wish I could like load this up on my phone and show you my games. I want to talk to you about my other passion, and that's models. So specifically, here, let me reach over. I've got two here. They're unbuilt currently, and they probably will never be built. So I've got a Messerschmitt. Setup.
Look at that.
I will pay you anything for those.
They are still in their plastic. You can see.
I've never seen that before. You know, let me just say, building scale models.
I would pay you $200 for those.
It's become such a lost art in the digital age. But sitting down to build just a scale thing like this, you can be as detailed as you want, and it's relaxing. And if you love cars, the end result can be so satisfying. Bruce, I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and no, this one is still, I don't know if you can see it, it's still in its wrapping. The Toyota TS GT1 TS020.
By Tamiya.
Yeah, this is a Tamiya.
That's a nice kit.
Yeah, and I want people to know, I do actually build models, because I can reach over here. This just needs some top coat. It is completed. This is a robot, but not a car, but still.
Well, you know you're serious when you have a block of foam with sticks in it so that you could put your pieces on to dry. I'm assuming that's what that is.
Well, so quick tangent. The place I spray is in my garage. My garage is not heated. The spray has to be kind of room temperature-ish. I live in Ohio. It's cold. I can't spray right now.
That's why that's in the house. Gotcha. Right.
It is completely done and ready. It just needs a top coat, which is what keeps the stickers and stuff on.
Can you help me? Because I think I am going to buy an RC car soon, and I do want to get an extra clear body, but I'm so scared about painting it. Will you help me?
Sure. Yeah.
Because that's what you do with models, right?
Well, you, with the RC cars, I mean, it's a Lexan body. You spray it up underneath and
yeah,
you
I'm just a, so
you
nervous.
You need to get like, a special, like a flexible paint.
I suck at that stuff.
Anyway. But with these specifically, so the funny thing is, you would think it would be the opposite, that robots are like really complicated. Like, I'll grab a piece here.
Oh, they're totally not. I mean, there's a reason Bruce and
this
I
has
are,
like
are doing this podcast.
Metal kinda... attached to it, like, and I've detailed and stuff like that. This is so much harder. But also, a lot of them I've gotten from my dad. Some of them I bought myself in terms of the cars. But also, I just love, these are not photos. These have been painted. Some artist out there, like, depicted these. And it's just gorgeous that, like, you know, you've got these, like, paintings here on the side. I'm trying to hold it up.
Like the
engines and stuff like that. And so the box art, even of themselves, are kind of something you can look at and admire.
I found a Dodge Deora model in my garage a couple of weeks ago from like my childhood, years and years and years ago, that I brought out from my childhood home. And I was about to throw it away because the model itself is completely hashed and like not salvageable, but it was the box art that made me reconsider it, because it's just so beautiful and so interesting. Like, they have this old Dodge Deora show car, like a lakeside campsite, and it's just like, it's gorgeous. It's completely fake, completely fanciful, but incredible. And that was what saved that model.
Over the years, I've actually cut out a lot of the box art from the models.
I do the same thing.
Just because it looks so good.
And just real quick, one last thing. I do have, like, I like in my room where I play video games, I do have a display of, you know, a lot of my Matchbox cars. So
I'm the same way.
Those are still in the package.
I have mine set up like that too.
So you can see that
I have a whole row of them here.
Very cool.
One more picture here real quick, like before I let someone else talk. But yeah, so you can see models in the background and old Matchbox cars. And you can see those were played with, like they've got paint chips and stuff like that. Those are the ones I had since I was a kid, but I also
I had that 928. I had that 928, Bruce.
Oh, that one? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like a random, like it's not a Hot Wheels or a Matchbox, right? It's like a totally random.
Yeah, it's just something, but I couldn't get rid of them, but you know, they got played with clearly. You can see kind of the paint chips, especially on these RX-7 on the bumper So that's where my kind of love starts.
Matchbox and Hot Wheels. I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen like some of the stuff on YouTube with their diecast racing championships where they had these intricate Neff. You were on 3D.
Oh, yeah, they named a car after me.
They named a car after you.
I have no idea how that happened.
Or did they really? I didn't hear about this.
I don't. Maybe I submitted my name like a year ago, or maybe somebody else submitted my name. But yeah, I was one of the drivers in
the 3D
bot maker diecast.
That was right after I started at Motor One, and I was still kind of like getting to know the team a little bit. And all of a sudden, you were the driver of this, and I was like, "Who is this person who is driving a 3D racer?
Famous.
What team did I just join?"
Oh, my car lost like immediately. First two races, it was completely out. It was a terrible car.
But the fact that those videos, I mean, that channel has a huge following.
It does, yeah.
Every video just gets like hundreds of thousands of views, found myself just completely enamored with it.
I'll watch it for like 2 hours to catch up on all the races.
And to have a setup like that with a track, I mean, when I have a larger house, which hopefully will be coming soon, I'm going to have a big play area. I'll talk a little bit about my stuff here. Well, I'll start by following up with Bruce and that I've always been a big modeler. I've got my 94 SVT Lightning.
That's a great kit. I've never seen that. Oh,
look at that box art.
Isn't that great?
Jesus. Yeah.
This is the next thing.
One of my favorite cars. One of my favorite cars of all time too. I love the Lightning.
I have a model of
your car.
That's your car.
Yeah.
The car that I actually have in the garage. I even put my little license plate on it.
Cool.
That's my little license plate. So, I mean, one of the best ones that I really enjoyed building was this LaFerrari doors open up. I don't know if you can really see in there, but I mean,
yeah,
this was so satisfying to build. And I spent several years where I didn't really build anything because I built a lot of these as a kid. And when you're a kid, it's like, I just want it done. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to build it. I just want it done. So with age, now comes the appreciation of the process. So I was able to get a lot better. Building that LaFerrari was just so satisfying. I probably spent a couple months just working on it a little bit. I learned, you know what, when you get to a point where you're feeling like you have to finish the step, stop. Because if you're feeling like, okay, I have to get this done, that's when you're going to make mistakes.
It's not going to turn out good.
And yeah, so I mean, I've got plastic models. I mean, you can probably see behind me. I don't know if you can see.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's actually a 125th scale car carrier that my father built.
Need to put a picture of that in the post because it's so impressive.
We'll put it up there. My father was a retired truck driver. He drove a 9-car, 10-car car carrier. I think he retired before they went to 10-car. That's a scale replica of a 10-car. Has you would have seen with Ford carrying Ford vehicles in the 80s. So of course I built 10 125th scale Ford Mustangs that's loaded out. Some of those cars are like 25 years old when I built them as kids. Some of them are just a couple years old. I mean this car sits on there. I took this off I love models. I have a lot of models. One of the things that I'm wanting to have when I get a bigger house and set up my big track is slot cars, because I also grew up with slot cars, and I was pretty fortunate in that I didn't have just small slot cars. My father was big into slot cars in the 60s, back when they were doing like 125th scale slot cars. So we actually had a big slot car track that I used to play with and enjoy. And I also grew up with, I don't know if you guys ever heard of this.
I've never seen that one.
US One Electric Trucking. It was like your typical HO slot car set, but it was trucks. And instead of just having a pin in the front, they had a pin in the front and the back, so you could go forwards and then backwards. And they had, there were all kinds of different sets that had different things. You could load up pipes and carry pipes.
Did they go slower or did they go fast?
They generally went slower, but because it was the same type of slot car track, you could put anything on there.
Wow.
And crank it up and go faster. So, I would have the trucks with like little Smokey and the Bandit cars it's had a lot of that as a kid. I would love to set that back up again.
Yeah.
My other big, I guess it's a hobby. I grew up with Transformers, and I'm sure a lot of people out there from the 80s remember.
Oh yeah.
The little, that's a G1 hot rod that I absolutely adore. And then, the Hasbro and all the companies figured out, well, these guys that had these as kids, now they're older with some disposable income. And it's really disposable because they came out with the Masterpiece series
that are
much bigger. They're much more detailed.
Yeah.
This is G1 Hot Rod as he looked in the cartoon.
Much better. And that fully transforms the Master.
Oh yeah.
Fully transforms. And the cheap ones are about like $100. Some of them, they've done like three versions of the original Optimus Prime. And,
as they say, take my money.
And it's up to like $400 for an Optimus Prime now.
Yeah, and Jason Marker of Ride Apart, you guys you guys are the Masterpiece Transformers masters.
Oh yeah, his
collection is way bigger than mine. This is pretty much my collection right here that we'll put a link to in the podcast article. I wrote about this for Motor One. What was it? 2018? Has it been that long?
Oh, yeah, 2018.
And of course, I set them up doing the YMCA dance because why not?
I never noticed that.
Because they're posable. Yeah. They can.
They're super posable. That's kind of my jam. I think the last time I bought one was 2018. So. Damn it.
Well, time to buy another one.
Maybe I'm kind of due. I don't know.
Do they have a Hot Rodimus Prime? Isn't that his name?
Well, technically, this guy was...
What happened when Hot Rod became...
Was called Hot Rod.
Right.
And in the Japanese, on the Japanese side, they called him Hot Rodimus. In the 86 Transformers movie... Optimus Prime dies. Hot Rod gets the Matrix of Leadership. He turns into Rodimus Prime. which was basically this car with like a big Winnebago back on it.
Can I just say, no one makes creative stories like Transformers anymore. Like, who thinks like we're gonna have cars that transform into robots that are like human? Like, man,
what you need? Well, right now it's Pokemon. Because let's be honest, somebody wasn't sitting around thinking, I want to make a car that turns into a robot. Somebody was sitting around thinking,
I want to make a toy to sell.
What kind of toy? Exactly. What kind of toy can we sell to kids? That's really how this all came about. We'll create this product and then we'll create some sort of television program that sells the product. And God bless my parents. They must have just been pulling out their hair. It's like, why do you want Starscream and this other Thundercracker? It's the same thing. It's just a different color.
How many Transformers are there?
I think in addition to the common threads of like random automotive hobbies that all of us share, it's the other common thread is our parents pulling their hair out every time we ask for a new automotive something or other when we're children. I think that's the other common thread that parents just don't totally get it, and they get real frustrated when we try and do it.
Well, they get it and don't get it though, because they still they feed that desire. Like, that's why we have a whole bin worth of Hot Wheels or something like that.
Yeah.
And then you're like talking to their friends, like, I don't know why he wants the Ninja Turtles van, but they still get us the Ninja Turtles van.
By the way, nobody's mentioned it yet, but I was Micro Machines instead of Hot Wheels and Matchbox.
I found some Micro Machines too.
Yeah.
And by the way, the new Micro Machines that are out, that came out this year, suck because they have no licenses. So none of the cars are real. That was the coolest thing about Micro Machines when we were kids, was all the cars were real cars, real Lamborghini Countaches, real Porsche 911s. And these new ones are just, you know, faux looking things. Like, come from Grand Theft Auto.
I just love that you're totally just reviewing these brand new. Oh, they suck, man. They've been going downhill since the 80s.
Yeah. And I had my San Francisco like playset for the Micro Machines that folded up into a toolbox.
I've got that right now, John.
That's awesome. I loved that thing. Carried it with me every time. Again, we went to the grandparents on Sunday. I have my Micro Machines with me.
We should not buy bigger houses. We are going
to have to revisit 80s, 90s car toys at some time. Unfortunately, this episode needs to come to an end. It's that time. I'm sorry, guys.
The podcast is going to come to an end, but let's be honest. This sucker is getting cracked open here in about 20 minutes, and I'm going to start sniffing some glue.
I'm going to go play some Lego Rally. Maybe on Forza.
I hope everybody out there that's listening is inspired to go play with some automotive toys of some sort.
Or go watch an automotive movie or
watch a movie. There's a YouTuber that I follow, MGO316, who does toy reviews and a lot of Transformer reviews. And I'm going to rip off his phrase. He says, "You don't get old because you stop playing. You get old." Or wait, I got that mixed up. You don't stop playing when you get old. You get old because you stop playing. There we go.
And the other thing is,
and it's true,
that you have to understand that just because you are not financially able to own the Ferrari, the Porsche, the Lamborghini, the Camaro that you want to own, you are just as valid of a car enthusiast that you build Lego, that you build models, that you get really into Forza, that whatever it is all part of this hobby, and none of it is less than any other. That if you love cars, you love cars, no matter if they're plastic, digital bits, or in the real world.
Bravo.
You're here.
Well said, sir.
Well, thanks, everybody. As we all like to say, good evening, good afternoon, good night, depending on when you're listening to this. We appreciate you spending time with us this evening.
Want to thank Mr. John Neff. Want to thank Mr. Brett Evans for joining us.
Absolutely.
Email us your stuff at podcast@motorone.com. You know, show us your collections too. Let's see your collections. Let's have some more fun with this.
Yeah. If you got some models, some Hot Wheels, a real garage full of stuff, some interesting old video games, like, we'll love to see that. So yeah.
Send it over.
Yep. Thanks a lot, guys. And we'll see you. Good night. Yeah.